Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 504 Core Podcast. I'm Corey Rolden, joined by Michael Foray. We're going to get Zach in here with some recruiting expert stuff coming up later in the show. But for now, let's talk about the New Orleans Pelicans briefly. Yeah, they've been eliminated. Yes, they were a disappointment. But Brandon Ingram, it's been reported, which does not shock me, got an argument with Coach Green about giving him the ball more in game two of the series against the Thunder, which they got swept. Look, I get Brandon's frustration, but you got to be more aggressive in getting your own shot. You got to be more aggressive in, you know, being more productive offensively. I think we gave him credit about owning up to his mistakes since Team USA last week, but now it's just kind of like an awkward fit. And I think it's going to come in a divorce, in my opinion. What's your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, no, I think it's inevitable that one of the three guys will be traded. And when I say three, I mean McCollum, Ingram, Zion. Obviously, I don't think Zion's going to be the one that's going to get traded. So it's going to come down to Ingram and CJ, and all those signs are pointing towards Ingram. So he didn't end the season well. All this reporting is coming out pretty timely now that the season's over. A little time has passed. So it was pretty obvious. There really wasn't the offense for the Pelicans is one of the worst in the playoffs in the past like 10 years. I saw like the numbers. So it wasn't really pretty. Willie Green's a defensive guy. He brought in Borrego. Borrego didn't really do too much on the offense to really, you know, besides point Zion. It wasn't really that impressive at the end of the season. So it's pretty obvious that, you know, Ingram really wasn't game playing that all too well. I don't know if you remember in the second half of it was game two, but Ingram had like 4 points in the first half, and the first play out, everyone was complaining on Twitter and everything else, like, why isn't Ingram shooting? Why isn't Ingram getting the ball? In the first play, they did like a rollout, and he caught the ball in mid-range and then went to the basket and got fouled, and that was like one of the last few times they called a play for him. Yeah, I mean, it really was kind of a pathetic outing by Ingram and just the Pelicans as a whole. So yeah. I'm not really surprised to see reporting like this coming at the end of the season. It's just unfortunate how it's going to play out, considering what he's done for this franchise, how much he loves the city, and how much he wants to be here. But yeah, if he's commanding max money, you can't give max money.
$50 million for Brandon Ingram is ridiculous. And just the reports of them wanting Trey Murphy to take over that small forward, kind of three-role wing. He's a better fit next to Zion.
If you're the Pelicans, like, and you'd be like, look, we'll keep you, but we're not going to give you max money. What if we would, like, do, like, 4 for $120? Would you want to do that?
Yeah, $30 million for Brandon Ingram's.
Yeah, get bump it up to 35, like somewhere in that range. But yeah, you can't pay him $50 million. That's a lot of freaking money. No. He's not worth that. If you had asked me a year or two ago, I would have said maybe, but I'm just glad Griffin waited and didn't, you know, extend him last year that, you know, and just kind of let it play out. So I think that was really, really smart by him and not kind of committing to everything. Like, we talk about all the time, like, small markets don't have the luxury of being like what big markets do. So to win a championship as a small market team, you have to be like, you have to hit about 90% of the decisions you make, if not more. So I think it was a good decision not extending him at the time.
Yeah. Later in the podcast, I want to talk about another small market team and how they build the Minnesota Timberwolves. But for now, I mean, with the Pelicans, before we move on quickly to the Saints and get into some other topics, what's one player do you feel like would be a perfect fit for the Pelicans to take that next step?
Like a trade target? Yes. You really need two things. First, you have to have a center. Like, I don't think they have any centers coming back next year. So, you know, no Valanciunas, no Zeller. Love Zeller, not coming back. There's literally no one that's going to play center next year except Larry Nance, and he's 6'7", so You got to get some kind of center. I don't know what that looked like. I don't know if that's going to come in the form of a trade by Ingram or, you know, someone following you at 21 in the draft. I'm not sure, a free agent, but you got to get a center. And then you need a point guard. You know, the half court offense looks like it's one of the worst in probably the league. And then The Pelicans are two teams. Their half court team is terrible, but like in them in transition, they're virtually unstoppable. So, you need a point guard. You need someone to kind of take over the lead role. I would love to get a Darius Garland. People throwing out fake trades with Ingram saying, you know, send him to Detroit, pair him with Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham. I love Jalen Duren. I think that'd be a great fit. He's young. He rebounds the ball. He plays.
And you would defense. Get the number two or one pick, right?
Yeah. Whatever pick, or if they want to offer a future first, whatever it may be, however you want to do it. You know, if Detroit offers a first for next year, lightly protect a first next year, and then kind of go all in on next year's draft with the Lakers, Detroit, our pick, and whoever else. And then you can see how the cards play. And if you want to package that for something for future picks on that, you could. The Pelicans have a lot of options. I think David Griffin's going to pull a rabbit out of the hat. I think he's going to do something unexpected that no one's really going to see coming. That's kind of how he operates. But yeah, you got to get center or point guard, if not both, whether that's a draft or a trade or whatever it may be. I don't think any free agents are going to push you over the top regarding that. So I know the Pelicans are pretty near the tax line. Is Gail Benson willing to pay the tax? You know, there's a lot of variables this offseason. Said it last year. Last year's offseason was really, really important. Now this year is probably this offseason is going to set the tone for the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah. So you really can't mess it up. And if they do mess it up, it could set you back a little bit, depending on how all in they want to go. I've seen people with Trae Young. I would despise Trae
Young. Darius Garland over Young.
Yeah. Well, who do you think would command more? Trae Young, I guess.
Yeah. I just think Garland's a more efficient basketball player.
Yeah, I agree. I know I see people like, oh, we got to get Trae Young. It's like, but then they complain about CJ McCollum. It's like, you know.
Trae Young's horrible defensively, turns over the ball a lot, and he takes a lot of shots.
Yeah. Very
inefficient basketball player.
Sounds like CJ McCollum. But he's definitely better than CJ McCollum. I'm not saying that. But then again, you know, Trae Young makes a lot more money than CJ McCollum. So it kind of balances out. Just whoever they go after, you know, you got to make sure the fit is solid, and you know, their age is appropriate. You don't want to go after Jimmy Butler, who's 35-36 years old, and then you know you got a year or two on him. So they, you know, you gotta be calculated in decisions and
a risk.
Yeah, I believe in Griffin at this point. I mean, he's got the franchise, the best point it's ever been, so we'll see.
I agree. Speaking of young players, what are your thoughts on Spencer Rattler?
Well, said last podcast, just you don't really have a future quarterback. Like Derek Carr is a, you know, he's a win now, or not win now, but he's today's problem. He's not tomorrow's problem. So you need that franchise guy. I really like Rattler, just because of the fact that he was viewed as a day two prospect, and you got him in day three. You didn't have to trade up to go get him. I really like that. I'm under the camp of just draft a quarterback every single year in third, fourth, fifth, whatever round until it hits. And then, like, you know, just have Hayner have some competition. I mean, they were signing like Kellen Mond and all those guys who they just released today, but you know, you got to have some competition. I think it's a great pick. What do you think?
No, I think it's a very high – I mean, it's a very – he's got a high ceiling. That's what I think about it, right? It's kind of like a low-risk, high-reward because you get him in the fifth round, right? But this guy can – I don't know what he can turn out to be, but he's got the talent. He's a number one high school prospect. He was solid at Oklahoma before fans started booing him off the field, transfers to South Carolina, was okay the year prior to this year. Remember that Tennessee game? He was really, really good 2 years ago. But yeah, I mean, we'll see with with Spencer Rattler. But I kind of like the pick more. I'm thinking about it. I hated it at the time just because of Michael Pratt. I wanted Pratt because I'm biased with Tulane. But
who do you think there's more upside though between Pratt and Rattler? Rattler, that's what you're basically going for in a fifth round pick. So
yeah, I think Pratt could be the better pro though, like longer career. I think Michael Pratt is Matt Flynn, potentially, but you know, I don't mind the pick.
Yeah, I mean, think, and then I also like it too because he's gone through adversity. Like it's good to have that. He seems a lot more mature than what he used to be. I used to watch that Netflix show with him, and it wasn't a good look. I know Ian Rappaport, when Rattler was drafted, he said a lot of teams took him off their board just because of that documentary. So, but I mean, he's a 15, 16 year old kid. You know, you would assume he's matured to the, you know, he's matured over the 6 or 7 years. So, I'm a fan of it. You know, we'll see what happens. Hopefully he can, you know, be a franchise guy moving forward. But, you know, it's a fifth round pick. Everyone needs to temper expectations because I've seen Saints Twitter say, oh, this guy already has the feel of a franchise guy. So, you know, people are crazy. People want to see this guy succeed. I mean, I hope he does. But it's a beautiful situation for him, too. He just sits behind Carr for a year, and then next year he competes with Carr. And, you know, if he beats Carr out, great. And then you just get rid of Carr and cut bait, kind of like what Denver did with Wilson. Just like at some point, just rip the Band-Aid off no matter what cost you. So I'm a fan of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, now before Zach gets on, let's talk about the NHL playoffs. Your Dallas Stars against the Colorado Avalanche. Heard a lot from Stars fans, but, you know, as I said, Colorado has the best player in NHL, Nathan MacKinnon, best defensive player in Cale Makar, and a loaded team offensively. That's why they led the NHL in goals scored this year. 3-0. A lot of talking from Stars fans. Didn't hear a lot of talking after that point because the Colorado Avalanche came with an avalanche. 3 quick goals like they typically do. Bada bing, bada boom. My prediction of a overtime Avs win came true. First Corinthians, Corey Rolden.
Relax.
Yeah, well, what do you like from that? You know, your buddy Jamie Benn had a goal. Y'all are up 3-0, and y'all thought things were safe, but yeah, not with the Avs, man. They can score 4 goals in 10 minutes. Just like
this series just seems like a classic 7-game series. You know, just this seems like a, you know, Philly Knicks kind of game, like series, just like back and forth. But yeah, I mean, Stars blew it. I mean, there's really no other way to say it. So,
had a lot of shots on goal. Because that's the thing about the Avs. The Avs will win this series if their goaltender, Georgie, played like he did last night. He's hot and cold. Because Colorado's going to score goals. That's what they do.
Like where does Georgie rank in, like, goalie rankings? Like, is he mid-tier? Is he
He has the most wins, but he's just – I don't think he's good. Game one of last series – Colorado scored 6 goals and lost.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good. Well, speaking on goalies, I mean, Ottinger was really good last year. And then this year, like, I don't know, he's taken a step back. But one thing you will notice about Ottinger, he does not play around the net. Like, even that one goal, he was, like, past the blue. And, like, there's two guys shielding him. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're not even giving yourself a chance. So,
yeah,
Ottinger kind of plays reckless. He's good at times. But, yeah, he does play, you know, he doesn't play really around the net, which makes me nervous as just a fan watching it. But, you know, the Stars got some guys. They got a mixture of young and seems like everyone teams like really young or really old. Like Ben's getting up there, Sagan's up there, Pavelski's a no show, but Pavelski, you know, can turn it on.
Bets and
young. Yeah, no, they have a really good mix. So Dallas is dangerous. Colorado's really dangerous. You know, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, like I said, I think it's gonna be a classic 7-game series. So we'll see.
Now let's move over to the NBA. Nikola Jokic is expected to win the MVP in the next 2 hours or so.
Did they announce it today?
Yeah, they're going to announce it in the next 2 hours or so. But moving on to that point with Nikola, the Wolves have just – they're hungry. That was the best defensive half I've seen in a long time. They just have 3 7-footers they can throw at Jokic. And then Nikhil Alexander Walker has been incredible using his length and his body defensively. Anthony Edwards is him. Dude, the Kobe Michael Jordan comparisons, I see it, dude. He's got that dog eyes. He is hungry, and he wants to snatch your soul. Very, very impressive by this Minnesota Timberwolves team. But I still don't think this series is over. Like, I am super impressed by the way they come out, how hungry they are, just their intensity defensively, their game plan. Like, I love how the referees actually called that game on Monday, where they didn't call any fouls, right? Denver whined and complained, while Minnesota did not. And a lot of people think this series is over, though. That's where I disagree. The Nuggets have come back from 3-1 down 4. They get one win on this next two games. Friday's the big one. I kind of want to see how this series plays out, because that's a veteran team against a young team. And Anthony Edwards plays like he's 28 years old. He's 22. He's the next guy. He's the next face of this league. He is a dog. He's him. But I just want to see how the rest of that series plays out. And then one more point about the NBA playoffs, Mike, with you. I hate how inconsistent refs are, because I liked how they called the Nuggets-Wolves series. They let them play. Michael Malone would have been ejected most other games. They didn't do that. They let them play. Then you watch the Thunder-Mavs series, and they're calling ticky-tack fouls every time. It's like, dude, pick one. If you're not going to call fouls, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the physicality, but don't be inconsistent the way you call games.
Yeah, no. Oh, going back to OKC, Denver, Denver, Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, the count Denver out is kind of insanity, to be honest with you. Even down 0-2. If down 0-3, okay, fine. But yeah, I mean, you still got the best player in the league. Jamal Murray hasn't lit it up. You know, it's kind of insane. I was telling my dad, I was like, it's kind of insane that Murray didn't get suspended for throwing shit on the court.
100%. Dude, I had an article written ready to go, because he didn't throw one towel, Mike. He threw two, and he did the money sign, and he threw one while they were playing, and Cat could have slipped and fell and hurt himself.
Yeah. Well, I you know why they didn't do it is because of money. Yeah. Well, they want a competitive series.
Have a reputation that he does that. Yeah. That was the big thing. He's like, he's never done anything before, and they fined him 0.003% of his salary.
Yeah, I mean, $100,000, $100,000, but yeah, that's literally nothing to what these guys are making. So, yeah, it's kind of a shame to see nothing really became of that. But I wish they'd do it like kind of college football, suspend them for the first half or something. Remember when Menzel got suspended for the first half of the game? Do something. But yeah, $100,000 ain't shit. But we'll see. What's the mood in Denver right now? Being down 0-2.
Hell's burning. Everything's on fire.
They're not used to crazy adversity.
Yeah, there's a rumor. I don't know how much you believe Gilbert Arenas. I think he's one of the worst NBA analysts there is right now. But apparently they're claiming Peyton Watson said that Jokic said that he's ready for horse season, basically. I don't know. I want to see how this team. Earlier, they had practice. They look good. Jamal Murray stormed out the locker room the past two games, right? Bad mood, got flustered. They were flustered, point blank, flustered. But they were better mood today, rested. They still got another 2 days before they play. Maybe Jamal's left calf strain, a little bit more healed up. But we'll see. I wouldn't count them out. Now let's transition into something all of us can talk about. Paul Skeens, about an hour ago, just called up on Saturday to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Paul, striking out everybody in minor league, only playing like three innings or so, not pitching a lot. But, dude. it's the most excited I've been from like an MLB debut since Steven Strasburg. Who? Chris Bryant? I don't remember.
Yeah, no, I'll chime in here. I know I just hopped in here and stuff, and my connection cuts out. Don't worry, I'm going to come right back. But no, dude, like we've had the opportunity to cover Paul Skeens, and just the chance to watch him dominate his way through the minor leagues and get back to this point is crazy. And the wildest part to me is just the fact that that 1 year at LSU was the first full year that he was a pitcher only. This is a guy who was playing multiple positions. He was hitting, he was doing whatever. So I feel like the sky's the limit for somebody like Paul Skeens, who's continuing to get into this, you know, MLB regime. For him, I can't wait for this debut. Whether they only let him pitch a couple innings or let him, whatever it's going to be, you might. I didn't get to read all the stories or anything yet, but obviously you guys cover him enough because it's Air Force. There's ties over there, but yeah, no. No matter what, I'm excited to see what can happen. And Paul Skeens is obviously a generational pitcher. Everybody said it, and now we get to see him watching the pros. It's gonna be fun.
So people are worried about his arm, right? Because he's like, I saw in the minors, he's throwing like 8,700 mile per hour pitches, and the next highest is like 20. And he's
that's crazy.
And dude, and he's not pitching a lot of innings. People are worried about like the Tommy John, but I feel like what's going to help him for the first couple years is that he wasn't a pitcher only for a while, because that's going to save his arm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he pitched minimal innings, and now he's finally ramping it up a little bit, as opposed to all these other guys who are pitching just an absolute shit ton of innings as youngsters, even all the way down to high school ball. So, yeah, he hits a lot less innings on his arm already, but, you know, the speed, nonetheless, is going to be something that, yeah, I can't wait to see it, but I know everybody's worried about the Tommy John stuff.
Yeah. Will Libby Dunn make an appearance?
Dude, you already know she will. Are you kidding me? You already know. She flew up there and was watching him pitch in the minors. You know she'll be there for the debut.
But is Pittsburgh competitive right now?
Solid. They're in the middle of the pack of the NL Central. The NL Central is terrible, so they still have a really good, not a really good chance of winning their division, but a chance.
Yeah, usually, you know, teams sit guys in the minors for a year or two for contract reasons. So I thought that was kind of interesting. He's coming up this year. I didn't know if
they're competitive or not. Terrible. They need a spark.
Yeah, I wonder how many. I wonder how they're gonna pitch him. Like, are they gonna try and load him up for 5+ innings, or are they gonna just kind of work his way in?
No, he hasn't really pitched 5+ innings yet since LSU, since that Friday game against or that Thursday game against Wake Forest. It's the most he's pitched in a year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
crazy. Yeah, like you said before, you know, he's at Air Force, you know. He's a good recruit or a good transfer, and then no one really expected this. And then he's like, oh, you know, look what happens when you get 8 hours of sleep and the proper nutrition. He's like, now I can throw 100 miles an hour. So no one saw it coming.
No other crazy human being, except maybe Randy Johnson, has been able to do this.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I feel like it's the most hype for a pitcher. Sorry to cut you off, Mike. I feel like it's the most hype for a pitcher since, like, Strasburg in, like, 2010, 2011, whatever it is. Like, this is insane.
Did they announce when he's pitching?
Yeah, Mainland. Saturday.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Is it on TV, I wonder?
I don't know.
Doesn't ESPN Plus have, like,
I'll be watching it from the Colorado Avalanche Stars game.
They'll find a way to stream that game. They have to.
It'll probably be on, but, yeah. What else do you want to hit on? I know Zach wants to touch on some LSU stuff. Yeah. I don't know if Corey, you're in the loop on that or not, but, yeah.
You know, before we let Zach go on his recruiting talk, I just want to just give my thoughts a little bit on Zach. What are your thoughts on the NBA playoffs, and who do you see winning it?
Yeah, I mean, I know you're out there in Denver. You're getting your chance to cover the Nuggets, and it's obviously the defending champs and whatnot. But I think the playoffs have been fantastic. And to me, I'm going to wrap it into like what we cover. Like, I'm going to kind of wrap it into the Pelicans. We're getting a chance to watch what it looks like to have a true rebuild with the Timberwolves and the Thunder. You have two teams who were tanking, top of the NBA draft. You know, they had so many years down at the bottom of the totem pole, and now you're seeing them both have a chance to potentially punch their ticket to the Western Conference Finals. And I think it's like a true testament to what it looks like to have a, like, genuine rebuild. And it's something that the Pelicans need to continue to try to, like, work towards, obviously. Hit me.
Yeah. That's a good point, because if you remember let's go back like 6-7 years ago when the Timberwolves had a young cat, young Wiggins. They go and get Jimmy Butler. That does not work out. They take a step back for like 2 years.
Yep.
They get the number one pick, pick Anthony Edwards. They kind of go, and then get Gobert, and they're really good now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like you're sitting – and it's a difference. It's different for the Thunder. Like, they built this team through the draft for the most part. Like, that Sam Presti or whatever, just give him all the flowers that he needs. But for the Wolves specifically, I feel like that's something that the Pelicans should be looking at and kind of copy that blueprint to a T. Because that team's fantastic. Like, you were sitting there a minute ago detailing Anthony Edwards and how he's kind of like – he's not even up next. Like, he's now – he plays like a savvy veteran. He's so passionate. So I love watching him play. But my overall thoughts, kind of like taking the whole Pelicans out of it, is it's been exciting to watch. I'm not even going to talk about the East because, to me, the East is just so irrelevant right now. The only thing that's relevant to me right now is the West and watching the Nuggets and the Wolves and the Thunder and just getting really some good basketball. So I'm excited to see what happens here. But, yeah, no, I love what I'm seeing from Ant-Man and that team. And, obviously, you know the Nuggets aren't going to go down without a fight. So that'll be a fun series.
Speaking of which, I'm going to let you go, Zach, and Mike, and talk about recruiting because it looks like we got a little breaking news here in Colorado. See y'all later.
Later, B. You're not going to announce it?
No, sir.
Yeah. So, all right. What's the latest with LSU?
I know. And if I cut out, just do whatever because I know my connect. I've been having some Wi-Fi problems. We got a new modem coming in the next couple of days. But, yeah, dude, I feel like everybody's going to want to sit here and just hear about the defensive tackle stuff with LSU. So hit me, whatever you got, lay it on me, man. I'm gonna
start it off, but dude, Bo Davis, what's going on, man? I mean, he hasn't, you know, he's so touted. They had to pay him a ton of money, you know, going 0-2 now 0-3 with CJ West going to, Indiana. So, who is the other one that I'm not mentioning?
Phillip Blitty.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, forgot about him too. So, I mean, you pay him all this money to recruit. He's supposed to be a great recruiter. I mean, have they landed a defensive line prospect since he's been here? I mean, it has. I know a lot of guys have been committed already. They got him kind of late, but, you know, this is – I don't know, man. It just hasn't – Brian Kelly said, oh, it's been great. We're getting all these guys in the door, but, you know, we haven't really seen anything. They had – I know LSU prepared a big – you probably know this more than me, but I know LSU had a – prepared a big NIL offer for both those guys, Williams and Barrow, and, you know, they struck out. So I'm going to let you kind of touch on that, but that's my thoughts from the outside looking in.
So kind of just detailing like each 0-4 is what we're going to say. But let me answer that first one that you said. Have they landed a guy yet? They got Wisconsin defensive line transfer, Gio Paez, and that's going to be a guy who's a rotational piece. But with the way the defensive line room looks right now, he could potentially be a big piece to what they do. But, yeah, no. Phillip Blitty was a guy who came and visited. He was a graduate transfer. He visited during the spring, and he was a player that this – look, the program, he's a highly coveted guy, and he ended up going to Auburn. Indiana transfer, a lot of people wanted him. LSU got him in for a visit, but ultimately went to Auburn and whatnot. That obviously isn't really the most coveted guy in the world, but he's a piece that LSU could have utilized to the highest degree. And then you really just look at somebody like CJ West, who look, a lot of people are going to sit here and say LSU missed out on that. Like, that's a strikeout. Is this or that. At the end of the day, he's not graduating from Kent State until August. This is a guy who's just committed to Indiana. And there's no national letters of intent. There's no nothing in the transfer portal. So you're going to hear a lot of programs in his ear until he walks across the stage in August. There were some academic issues there, so he won't graduate until August. So LSU's going to put their foot on the gas for him until then, and that's going to be a really big, really big target. Other than that, I mean, dude, you already know the Dominic Williams stuff and the Simeon Barrow. When it comes to Dominic Williams, that's a guy who has a decent stat line, and he's a fantastic player. But at the end of the day, LSU wasn't going to pay $1.5 million for a Toyota Camry, or how they viewed it. Like LSU wasn't going to drop this insane bag on a player who they weren't going to get into a NIL bidding war for. And look, he's a big time player, the top uncommitted defensive lineman in the portal. But at the end of the day, Brian Kelly and this entire staff weren't going to get into a bidding war for him.
Is that how much he got?
He got a lot of money. A lot of people are throwing around numbers like $1.5 million, but the money that he wanted would have made him the highest paid player on LSU's roster, over guys like Will Campbell, over guys like Harold Perkins. And you have to think about it at the end. Like, you have to look at the whole body of work here. Like, yes, you get the defensive tackle that you want. You pay him the money that he wants. But there's a trickle effect there. Like, if you pay a guy like that $1.5 million, what's Harold Perkins going to say? What's Will Campbell going to say? These players are going to sit here and be like, well, I want that money. And then what, they opt out? Or it creates some controversy in the locker room? Bottom line, hypothetically, if he was getting $1.5 million, he was going to be getting the second most money in the entire building with the coaches too. Like, the only person that was going to be making more money than Dominic Williams is Brian Kelly. Like, the assistant coaches don't even make $1.5 million a year.
That is correct. I haven't really thought about that. That's pretty smart. I never really thought about that.
Look, at the end of the day, Dominic Williams is a fantastic player. So I'm not going to sit here and rip on this guy and act like I'm saying the Camry joke. Like, it's just like a hypothetical here. Like, what I'm trying to say is like, bottom line, you're not going to get into a bidding war with programs like Texas, Miami, and Oklahoma, who threw the house at him, and other big-time programs who have deep, deep pockets in the NIL space. So, yes, losing Dominic Williams was a tough one, a tough pill to swallow for this program. But looking at the big picture here, Bo Davis has dipped his feet, you know, in this 2025 class in a big way. A lot of people are coming to campus this summer. You look at Dominic McKinley, who's the number one player in the state, five-star defensive lineman. He put pen to paper once Bo Davis was on staff. So, you know, ultimately he's doing his thing on the recruiting trail. But, yeah, the transfer portal strikeouts are the talk of the town, and it's what a lot of people want to talk about. But it's the sky isn't falling. They're going to get one or two guys, and we kind of move on from there. But, yeah, certainly the comments that Brian Kelly made yesterday saying that we're not in the market to pay players like this exceptional amount of money, certainly that steals headlines. But really what he was trying to do was detail one player in, you know, Dominic Williams, saying, look, we're not going to get into a bidding war for somebody who is looking for a bag, not necessarily the whole body of work, like development, the nutrition program, strength program, the entire program as a whole, somebody who's looking more for a bag.
Yeah, 1.5 is crazy. I didn't realize it was
that. That's the number.
Yeah, that's the rumored number. What about Barrow? What happened with Barrow?
Money. I mean, look, like, same thing. I think some players, I had the chance to talk to Simeon Barrow, and he had a really, really interesting transfer portal process, just because he narrowed his schools down to six the day that he got in the portal. He knew where he wanted to go, and that first visit was to LSU. The plan for LSU all along was to get Barrow on campus and not let him leave. The plan was to get him on campus and get him committed before he leaves. So obviously it didn't go as planned, and he took his other visits, and Miami threw him an exceptional NIL package, and he took it, and you move on from there. Yes, Miami hasn't been the most prominent program from a player development perspective, but when you throw in the culture of Miami and the lifestyle out there and the money and the opportunity to play in a big-time program and in a big-time conference, take it or leave it, it's hard to pass up. And that was the one to me that kind of stung, just because the money was a lot, but you got him on campus the first visit, and I felt like you were trending in the right direction for him. But Miami, at the end of the day, offered an NIL package that he obviously couldn't resist.
Well, that's kind of my point. It's just like, I'm just kind of waiting for Bo Davis to start closing some of these kids.
I think you and the rest of the LSU community and everybody else in Louisiana is kind of waiting to see who they can get. Because it's looking pretty bleak. It's looking pretty tough in that defensive tackle room right now. You're going to have to expect Dominic McKinley to make a huge, huge jump this entire summer before his first fall in Death Valley, because he's going to be a contributor. He has to be.
What did he play? Did he play defensive tackle or more end or kind of both?
He's a Swiss Army knife just because he's an absolute stud. And yeah, he was playing against pretty good competition, but he was just a physical specimen, so he could play wherever you want, line him up wherever, and he was going to get in the backfield. He's going to be a defensive tackle for LSU, and Bo Davis and the star coaching staff are obviously excited about him. I would have loved to have seen him enroll early just so he could get a spring under his belt, but now he's going to get to campus at the end of May in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and it's full steam ahead to get this guy in the weight room and get him conditioned, because at this point in time, he's going to be a big-time contributor. But LSU's going to get one or two guys. They're going to get somebody in the portal, and you're just going to have to move on from there. Obviously, it's not that Dominic Williams or Simeon Barrow, but you're going to get some bodies to round out the depth of that room.
Yeah, I think at this point, it's just just warm bodies and just keeping Guillory healthy. And I mean, Guillory's not a bad starter. Like he has flashed at times as LSU. I mean, you just need guys to take up space. Like you need to.
Guillory's
like,
fine.
Guillory is not a bad player by any means. But
like,
yeah,
Guillory's your penciled in starter right now. You're looking for that person who can line up right next to him this fall. Because right now you have Jalen Lee, who's relatively unproven. And then you have Kimo Makinole, who's an offensive lineman turned defensive lineman. So the depth in that room is just something that is just has the entire LSU fan base in an uproar right now. And you can't really say to be patient anymore because you're sitting here in May and summer workouts are about to start. So it's hard to tell like the LSU fan base, like be patient, but yeah, it's slim pickings right now. And you're ultimately going to have to seal the UL Monroe transfer, Aiden Huntington. That's the target on your board right now. And they've been in touch. LSU's been contacting him, and I put something out today about them and them being in touch. And he has a lot of other programs in his ear too. He's a relatively undersized defensive tackle. He's sitting at about 6 foot, 260, 270. But a lot of people are hoping he can be like a Makai Wingo type of impact player. So I think he can be that. I really hope LSU can seal the deal there, but other programs aren't going to go down without a fight. So it's certainly going to be something where they're throwing some NIL packages at him, I hope, because
who else is going after that kid?
A lot of big programs that it kind of he's been pretty mum about it, so I'm going to be the same. But a lot of big time programs are going after him. The defensive tackle market is booming right now. There's a lot of money to be made right there, and I really hope you don't see a lot of players start to wait until the spring portal or I hope a lot of people don't wait until the spring portal to make that decision. But ultimately, yeah, like it's slim picking. So these kids are getting bags.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Let's hope he can close the ULM kid. But what about there was someone else saying Javar Suggs, Grand Valley State. Have you heard anything?
Yeah. LSU went on and they offered him today. That's a guy who there's a couple of different ties there. Obviously Brian Kelly coached over at Grand Valley State and whatnot. And his son is on the coaching staff over there. So there are a bunch of different ties, but he released his top six yesterday with a bunch of very impressive schools like Michigan. And I think Florida State was on there. You have a lot of big time programs on there, and Michigan got him in for a visit. So we'll see. LSU's really late in the game for this kid, considering I was told that he's looking to shut down his recruitment this week. So LSU's late in the game here, but I think if you can piece something together enough to sway him in this direction, all could look good, but it's late in the game. So we'll see what can happen there. But yeah, that offer went out today.
It seems like there's like no good defensive tackles. Like
not anymore. We're in May. The portal window was April 16th to April 30th, where you could enter, and you see a lot of the guys shut down their recruitment during that time. So yeah, it's slim pickings. Everybody's already committed elsewhere and getting ready for summer workouts. So it's a challenge, and LSU's definitely, you know, playing catch up here.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Besides those names, anyone else that kind of whispering around? Just those. Now they're just trying to get everything good. Yeah,
that's all that I've heard. Certainly they've created a new big board, and they have some players that they're, you know, digging into right now and doing the evaluation process. But those are the two guys who certainly seem like they're pushing for right now. I'm sure more people will come up soon.
Yeah. Jacoby Matthews, I know he entered A&M, or he entered the portal from A&M. Is there still that like sit out rule? I keep hearing different things. So he'd have to sit out a year.
You even have people in the media who are confused about it, because those two programs, A&M and then whatever, like Texas, Oklahoma, everybody like coming in, people from those schools aren't technically ineligible. So you look at somebody like him, can he get around it with a waiver? For me to answer that question, I would say yeah. That rule still exists.
And is there interest there between LSU? No,
not that I've heard. No.
They got to be pretty confident in their secondary then.
I've heard a lot of Oregon buzz. I've heard a lot of other stuff for him, but there's no interest for LSU, just because he'd probably have to sit out for the year to be eligible the next year.
Yeah, that's interesting. Any other transfers that you're hearing about, or is it just kind of defensive tackle or bust right now?
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun Jones was a guy. He's a cornerback from Wake Forest was told LSU was in contact with. Corey Raymond went up and visited him face-to-face, and LSU was trying to get him in for a visit and really pushing for his services. But he went to Alabama on Saturday. He was there for about a 24- to 36-hour stretch. And fresh off that visit to Alabama, all the buzz was that he was going to shut down his recruitment and commit to them. So for now, that looks to be the case. But I'm sure LSU's still in his ear and doing what they can, because as of Saturday, they were still contacting him. But we're going to see what can happen there. But it sounds like all the buzz is going towards Alabama for Deshaun Jones.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, if you could add a cornerback like him, that'd be pretty nice. But yeah, it just seems like defensive tackle or bust right now. And I saw that a bunch of coaches went to go visit Bryce Underwood the other day, huh?
Yeah. So yesterday on Tuesday, Joe Sloan and Frank Wilson hopped on a flight and went up to Michigan to go check out Bryce Underwood again. And look, that's about as generational of a quarterback as we've had in a little bit. And I know people throw out the word generational all the time, and it's probably thrown around a little bit too much. But this is a guy who doesn't turn 17 until August. He's young, and he could really be in the 2026 class if he wanted to be. But bottom line is he's not, and he's committed to LSU, and he committed in January, and LSU's keeping their foot on the gas until he puts pen to paper in December. He was on campus in March. He was on campus in April. And now the recruiting staff is going up there, and Joe Sloan and Frank Wilson, and hopped on a flight and went and spent the day with him yesterday in Michigan, and they're going to get him back in town before his senior year starts too. So they're keeping their foot on the gas here for him, and they're not letting up anytime soon. And he's locked in with LSU, man. He hasn't really been talking to that many other schools. He hasn't taken any other visits. So LSU's just doing all they can to keep it that way and make sure he's locked in until the December early signing period.
Yeah, that's great. I love hearing that. They're not taking it lightly. So what about DeCorian Moore? I know I asked you last time. There were some other teams kind of lingering around, but is there anything new regarding that or not really?
Yeah, I think you're going to see until the buzzer in December, the DeCorian Moore buzz. Is it going to be Oregon? Is it going to be Texas? Is it going to be Ohio State? Who's going to throw them some more NIL packages and see what they can do to sway him away from LSU? And it's going to be that way, like I said, until the buzzer. He didn't go to the LSU spring game. Instead, he went and checked at Ohio State. Texas is in his ear. And you know that they're exceptional in the NIL game. There's a connection with Oregon. One of his close person with his camp is now on their staff. So it's going to be a thing until the buzzer. But nonetheless, DeCorian Moore would love to suit up with Bryce Underwood, Harlan Berry. It's kind of your five-star trio right there. So they'll be working until the buzzer for DeCorian. But until he decommits, not much to say, because you don't know what's going to happen here. It's going to be a fun recruitment for DeCorian.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how everything plays out. It is trending up in a 2025 class. There's really no stopping it. So, I mean, who didn't Ohio State just jump them recently in on three?
Yeah, there's the industry rankings, and then there's the team rankings. There's so many different rankings right there. But yeah, Ohio State's pieced together a pretty impressive class, and you'll probably see them too, and obviously a couple other programs like Notre Dame somehow. And others really kind of getting around that number one to three slots.
Is there any other recruiting stuff that's going on that kind of catches your eye? What's the latest with Kalik Lockett? What's going on with him?
Kalik Lockett's going to be a fun one. He's playing on that 7-on-7 team with Bryce Underwood, Harlan Berry, James Simon, a bunch of guys who have Louisiana ties. Kalik Lockett's going to be a fun one. I think it's ultimately going to come down to LSU, Texas, and Texas A&M. But bottom line, I think it's important to talk about that 7-on-7 team that was created here in Louisiana, Team Flow, and they're being coached by Ryan Clark. And Kalik Lockett came in town. He's playing with that team. They were in Orlando 2-3 weeks ago. And I think LSU is going to be swinging for the fences for this kid. And he's the number two wide receiver in America. So if you hold on to DeCorian, you're going to have the number one and number two wide receivers in America paired with the number one running back in Harlan Berry, paired with the number one quarterback in Bryce Underwood. So you get somebody like Kalik Lockett on board, and you're looking at just an absolute generational class in 2025 that can really move the needle for this program for years to come.
Is James Simon going to go to Texas or what?
All the buzz that I've heard is that he's going to go to Texas. Yeah, that's really all I can say. Just and you're seeing the crystal balls be punched in, and you're seeing a lot of different things. But the buzz is that Simon's going to end up at Texas for sure.
Damn. Yeah, I mean,
I don't think LSU is going to stop. I think he can verbally commit and do what he needs to do there. Commit to Texas if that's the route that he so chooses. I'm not speaking for someone of his caliber, but let's say hypothetically he shuts down his recruitment tomorrow or this weekend and commits to Texas. You don't put pen to paper until December. I could very well imagine LSU keeping their foot on the gas for somebody like Simon until December. and hope that he decommits and puts pen to paper with LSU in December. Obviously, LSU already has two running back commits in JT Lindsey and Harlan Berry. JT Lindsey being, you know, a top 10 player in the state of Louisiana, a top 12 running back in America. So he's talented, but I've heard that they'd be willing to take three running backs if it came down to it. So they're going to keep their foot on the gas for James.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I know you got to go soon, but LSU Alabama this weekend, baseball, just quick predictions on how it goes.
Look, you're in do or die mode right now. They just came out with the kind of the tournament buzz and stuff, and it seems like LSU is one of the first four teams out. So, yeah, it's a make or break weekend once again, and LSU's been playing like every game's a game seven. So I think they'll take that approach into this weekend, and I hope they can steal two games and win the series. I mean, goddamn, you don't really have much of a choice at this point. So, yeah, my prediction will be they come out and steal two games, hopefully.
If they go 2 out of 3, do you predict they get in?
I think this is going to be going down until that last weekend. I'm pretty sure it's Ole Miss the final weekend. So I think it's going to be going until your final SEC game.
Yeah, Ole Miss isn't that good though, right?
They're not, but anything can happen in baseball. We saw them almost lose to Northwestern State last night. So
yeah, that was a bad L by Northwestern State. Yeah. That was not good. I kind of felt sorry for him. But,
so did I, dude. So anything can happen. Like, we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, that'll wrap it up. If you guys can like and subscribe, we'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.